Thanks for listening to our podcast. We've got more information and additional resources at probe.org/podcast. And be sure to check out our life-changing Summer Mind Games Camp for high school and college students.
Like it or not, the Ten Commandments are an essential building block of American culture. Kirby Anderson shows why, now on Probe.
The ongoing debate about the posting of the Ten Commandments in public places has certainly been controversial for the last few decades. But as we'll see this week, there was a time not so long ago when politicians and citizens alike saw the Ten Commandments as the very foundation of our society. In 1980, the Supreme Court ruled against the posting of the Ten Commandments in the public schools in the case of Stone v. Graham. They ruled that the preeminent purpose for posting the Ten Commandments on schoolroom walls is plainly religious in nature. Now, the justices even worried what would happen if students were to read the Ten Commandments on the classroom wall. Quote, "If the posted copies of the Ten Commandments are to have any effect at all, it will be to induce the school children to read, meditate upon, and perhaps even venerate and obey the commandments. However desirable this may be as a matter of private devotion, it is not a permissible state objective under the Establishment Clause." Unquote. Now, in 2005, the Supreme Court revised this decision because of cases from Kentucky and Texas. A divided court struck down displays in two Kentucky courthouses, but ruled a Ten Commandments monument on state government land in Texas was acceptable. Anyone looking for a clear line of reasoning that provides guidance for future cases will not find them. In the Kentucky cases, two counties posted copies of the Ten Commandments on the walls of the courthouse. These were considered unconstitutional. The Texas case involved a 6-foot granite monument on the grounds of the Texas Capitol. It was deemed acceptable because it was one of 17 historical displays on a 22-acre lot. Although this was considered constitutional, some justices couldn't even accept that. Justice John Paul Stevens said, quote, "The monument is not a work of art and does not refer to any event in the history of the state," he wrote. He goes on to say that the message transmitted by Texas' chosen display is quite plain. This state endorses the divine code of the Judeo-Christian God, unquote. Other justices noted that one monument amongst many is hardly an endorsement of religion. You can stop to read it, you can ignore it, you can walk around it. Chief Justice William Rehnquist argued that the monument's placement on the grounds among secular monuments was passive rather than confrontational. Justice Antonin Scalia listed various ways in which higher beings are invoked in public life, from "So help me God" in inaugural oaths to the prayer that opens the Supreme Court sessions. He asked with all reality and much more stariness in the face, how can the court possibly assert that the First Amendment mandates government neutrality?
You've been listening to Probe with your host, Kirby Anderson. To get your free copy of Kirby's transcript, The Ten Commandments, visit us online at probe.org. Join us next time here on Probe.
When we look at the Founding Fathers, we see they were anything but neutral when it came to addressing the influence of the Ten Commandments on a republic. For example, 12 of the original 13 colonies incorporated the entire Ten Commandments into their civil and criminal codes. John Quincy Adams stated, quote, "The law given from Sinai was a civil and municipal as well as a moral and religious code. These are laws essential to the existence of men in society, and most of which have been enacted by every nation which ever professed any code of laws," and added that vain indeed would be the search among the writings of secular history to find so broad, so complete, and so solid a basis of morality as this Decalogue lays down, unquote. John Witherspoon was the president of what later came to be known as Princeton University and was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He said that the Ten Commandments are the sum of the moral law. John Jay was one of the authors of the Federalist Papers. He later became the first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. He said that the moral or natural law was given by the sovereign of the universe to all mankind. On September 19, 1796, in his farewell address, President George Washington said, "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports." William Holmes McGuffey, considered the schoolmaster of the nation, once said that the Ten Commandments and the teachings of Jesus are not only basic, but plenary. Now, in the U.S. Capitol, there are displays of the great lawgivers, Hammurabi, Justinian, John Locke, William Blackstone. All are profiles of the lawgivers except for one. The relief of Moses is full-faced rather than in profile and looks directly down onto the House Speaker's rostrum. Now, anyone who enters the National Archives to view the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution must first pass by the Ten Commandments embedded in the entryway of the archives. Likewise, there are a number of depictions of the Ten Commandments. One is on the entry to the Supreme Court chamber, where it is engraved on the lower half of the two large oak doors. Another is engraved in stone above the head of the Chief Justice, with the great American eagle protecting them. And Moses is included among the great lawgivers in the sculpture relief of the East Portico. Chief Justice Warren Burger noted the irony of this in the U.S. Supreme Court decision of Lynch v. Donnelly. He said, quote, "The very chamber in which oral arguments on this case were heard is decorated with a notable and permanent, not seasonal, symbol of religion, Moses with the Ten Commandments," unquote. For the next few days, I want to show how the Ten Commandments were expressed in the American civil law. It may surprise you to find out that all of the commandments were written into the law in some way. Now, these illustrations are descriptive, not normative. I'm not arguing that we must return to these legal formulations in every case cited. We may certainly disagree to what extent the Ten Commandments should be part of our legal structure, but there should be no disagreement that at one time the Ten Commandments were the very foundation of the civil laws of America. The Ten Commandments can be summarized in this way. Number 1, have no gods. Number 2, have no idols. Number 3, honor God's name. Number 4, honor the Sabbath. Number 5, honor your parents. Number 6, do not murder. Number 7, do not commit adultery. Number 8, do not steal. Number 9, do not commit perjury. And number 10, do not covet. The Ten Commandments might also be called rules of number 1, religion. Number 2, worship. Number 3, reverence. Number 4, time. Number 5, authority. Number 6, life. Number 7, purity. Number 8, property. Number 9, tongue. Number 10, contentment. Now the first commandment is, "You shall have no other gods before me," Exodus 20, verse 3. There were a number of early colonial laws that addressed this command. A law passed in 1610 in the Virginia colony declared that since we owe our highest and supreme duty, our greatest and all our allegiance to Him from whom all power and authority is derived, I do strictly command and charge all captains and officers to have a care that the Almighty be duly and daily served. A 1641 Massachusetts law stated that if any man after legal conviction shall have or worship any other god but the Lord God, he shall be put to death, Deuteronomy 13, 17 and Exodus 22. The second commandment is, "You shall not make for yourself an idol," Exodus 20, verse 4. A 1680 New Hampshire law declared, "It is enacted by ye assembly and ye authority thereof, yet if any person having had the knowledge of the true God openly and manifestly have or worship any other gods but the Lord God, he shall be put to death," Exodus 22 and Deuteronomy 13. We can see that the Ten Commandments were influential in American law, and tomorrow we'll continue looking at some other ways in which the Ten Commandments became part of the American civil law. The third commandment is, "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain," Exodus 20, verse 7. Now, laws to obey this command came actually in two forms. Some were laws prohibiting blasphemy, and others were laws against profanity. Noah Webster discussed both of these categories in relation to the third commandment in one of his letters. He said, quote, "When in obedience to the third commandment of the Decalogue, you would avoid profane swearing, you are to remember that this alone is not the full compliance with the prohibition which also comprehends all irrelevant words or action, and which tends to cast contempt on the Supreme Being or His word and ordinances," unquote. As Commander-in-Chief, George Washington issued numerous military orders during the American Revolution that prohibited swearing. This is one of the orders issued on July 4, 1775. Quote, "The general most earnestly requires and expects a due observance of these articles of war established for the government of the army, which forbid profane cursing, swearing, and drunkenness, and in like manner requires and expects of all officers and soldiers not engaged on actual duty a punctual attendance on divine service to implore the blessings of heaven upon the means used for our safety and defense," unquote. After the Declaration of Independence, George Washington issued similar orders to his troops during the Revolutionary War, and similar prohibitions against blasphemy and profanity were issued throughout the rest of the 18th and into the 19th century. The fourth commandment is, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, Exodus 20, verse 8. Each of the colonies and states had laws dealing with the Sabbath. Even the U.S. Constitution has a provision stipulating that the president has 10 days to sign a law, Sundays excepted. An 1830 New York law declared that, quote, civil process cannot by statute be executed on Sunday, and a service of such process on Sunday is utterly void and subjects the officer to damages, unquote. Many other states had similar laws. During the American Revolution, George Washington issued military orders directing that the Sabbath be observed. Here is his order of May 2, 1778 at Valley Forge. The Commander-in-Chief directs that divine service be performed every Sunday at 11 o'clock in those brigades in which there are chaplains, those which have none to attend the places of worship nearest to them. It is expected that officers of all ranks will be, by their attendance, set an example to their men. Unquote. The fifth commandment is, honor your father and your mother, Exodus 20, verse 12. A 1642 Connecticut law dealt with this commandment and cited additional verses. If any child or children above 16 years old and of sufficient understanding shall curse or smite their normal father or mother, he or they shall be put to death. The sixth commandment is, you shall not murder, Exodus 20, verse 13. A 1641 Massachusetts law declared, quote, if any person commit any willful murder, which is manslaughter committed upon premeditated malice, hatred, or cruelty, not in a man's necessary and just defense, nor by mere causality against his will, he should be put to death. If any person slayeth another suddenly in his anger or cruelty of passion, he shall be put to death. Unquote. The seventh commandment is, you shall not commit adultery, Exodus 20, verse 14. Most colonies and states had laws against adultery, and even in the late 19th century, the highest criminal court in the state of Texas declared that its laws came from the Ten Commandments. Quote, the accused would insist upon the defense that the female consented. The state would reply that she could not consent. Why? Because the law prohibits with a penalty the completed act. Thou shalt not commit adultery is our law as well as the law of the Bible. Unquote. The eighth commandment is, you shall not steal, Exodus 20, verse 15. All colonies and states had laws against stealing based upon the Ten Commandments. A Louisiana Supreme Court in 1951 also acknowledged, quote, in the Ten Commandments the basic law of all Christian countries is found, the admonition, thou shalt not steal, unquote. The ninth commandment is, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, Exodus 20, verse 16. The colonies and states had laws against perjury and bearing false witness. In modern times, the Oregon Supreme Court declared that, quote, no official is above the law. Thou shalt not bear false witness is a command of the Decalogue, and that forbidden act is denounced by statute as a felony, unquote. And the tenth commandment is, you shalt not covet. Many of the founders and framers saw this commandment as foundational for others. William Penn of Pennsylvania declared that he that covets can no more be a moral man than he that steals, since he does so in his mind. This week we've been talking about the Ten Commandments and how it applies to our early history in America.